family and his life. Sheltered, good one. What else?
Jewish.
Okay. Hasidic, more yeshivish, whatever, something like that. Hamish, more accurately. What else? Shelter was a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Good answer, good answer. Okay, good. What is lacking in Mutti's Jewish experience?
The right Jewish woman.
No, okay. I don't know what that means. So he's feeling, if you saw the montage, basically that he's describing his life is from cradle to grave, from bris milah to bar mitzvah to wedding. His life basically is scripted. He's feeling very like confined. He's feeling very like stuck in a rut. He's feeling in a very narrow place. Okay, good. Laura, AKA the Shiksa, is described, he called her, I don't know if you caught the little thing, there's a little bit of a garbled thing, fire. In what ways is she different from Mutti's lifestyle and family?
She's a lot freer.
She's freer. Right. She is wearing pants. He did happen to notice that. What? She does whatever she wants. She's out there in the world. Notice she's driving a bicycle montage. She's like, she's free. She's enjoying life, and he's living in this very yeshivish, sheltered, narrow existence. Okay. Here's the question. Here's now getting to the juicy part. What does Mutti hope to get from Laura beyond mere sexual fantasy? Freedom. Exactly. He's looking for a way out of his narrow life, and she's the ticket. In addition to the sexual part, I don't want to discount that part, but it's not just simply that. He uses her life. That's why he starts to shave. He wants to wear the. In other words, she's cool. He's super nerd. His life is super nerdy. He feels like, and he has big aspirations. He wants to live life as he imagines it to be. Okay, so let's read. This is a pasuk from Bracious. I don't know if anybody can hear it, so I'll just read it out. So this is from the third chapter in Bracious, when the Nachash, the serpent, said to Eve, to Chava, rather, God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So Rashi comments, what does it mean, you'll be like God? Three words, creators of worlds. That's what the seductive element that the Nachash, or you might say the Yetzer Hara, put into the mind of Chava, knower, creator of worlds. Okay? So basically that means that Rashi identifies the root cause of any sin, any hate done by the Yetzer Hara, is this fantasy, which is what? Rather than discovering and intelligently implementing Hashem's wisdom, which she was doing prior to partaking of that tree, of the fruit, we create a fantasy world. And in that fantasy world, what roles we play? We're the star. So let me just work that through in a few parts. Is a child wishing to be an NBA star or a world-class ice skater creating a fantasy world for themselves?
Probably.
Just probably?
Well, maybe they can achieve it, so that's why.
Okay, correct. But until they achieve it, in other words, they're living. They imagine themselves. I'm in Madison Square Gardens. I'm playing for the Lakers. I have the same level. But in reality, a fraction of 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 the NBA basically represents 250 of the most talented, gifted, athletes in the world.
Okay, what age are we talking about, though? And relatively, most kids grow up, they want to be firemen or police officers if they look up to them. And then at a certain point, they're not.
Right, so that's the initial fantasy. That's the initial fantasy. And that wears off. And that loses its allure. and that starts to move on. Go ahead. It's all, yes. Okay, fine. So also a world-class skater. She's, you know, the typical, it could be a boy or girl, typically a girl. She visualized herself in the Olympics doing an unbelievable routine. But, you know, either then she might take guy skating. And then, of course, in order to do that, first of all, you have to be amazing. And you have to spend your, you have to dedicate your entire life to that. And then you realize that, you know, that fantasy, A, is not going to happen for me, or B, it's just not worth it. And you people will typically move on to another fantasy. Okay, so is Mati's choice to do the hate of interdating based on desire to be a creator of worlds? Let me put the yeah, go on.
I think that there's a distinction between fantasizing about the future and fantasizing about the present.
What's the difference?
Future is on. You know, whether you're going to be a professional basketball player.
Oh, I can't get to it. Okay.
Penny, can you repeat that and brief for us?
There's a distinction.
Hold on, I can just go like this.
There you go. What I'm saying is that there's a distinction between two different types of fantasies. There's a fantasy about the future, which is not yet known, like whether someone is going to become a professional basketball player or not. And then there's a fantasy about the present, which is thinking that reality is different than what it actually is.
Different
types of fantasies. You have
true. One is more, the person who believes they're in a different world currently, we call the person psychotic.
Or delusional.
Delusional.
Or,
that,
okay. or each and every one of them.
Okay. No, but that's talking about a person who's in a psychologically unwell state. We're talking about a person who's looking toward the future.
No. What I mean is people argue whether God exists.
Okay. But I kind of side with Adrian
on this in the sense that like all kind of neuroses is the kind of like kind of the buffer or what's in between the world and ourselves. Like we all kind of live in our own world in the sense that like we have a subjective experience of it and true. As our psyches put it together.
True. This is did everybody see this?
No, we
can't
hear Max.
Hi guys. We went from high tech to very, very low tech. This is a low tech experience. This is the low tech. You take out the internet, then you're like you got nothing. I mean, all our little gadgets over here. 613. So that's true. I mean, that's true. We're all living in varying degrees of certain fantasies about. We're gonna develop that point that Adrian brought up at Max, and let's save that a little bit longer. Okay, we're gonna get there. So does he have a desire to be a creator of worlds? What world does he want to be in?
The secular world.
That's it. He actually probably wants, is he only secular? Does he have?
I think he wants to experience life outside of his insular community. He doesn't want to be a creator of worlds, but have an experience life in a more expansive way than he has been in his current situation growing up.
100%. He wants to create his own world, which he has maybe a part of his Jewish world to the extent that he wants it. And he wants to have this open vista of experience that he envisions of this cosmopolitan
of Laura's butt.
What?
Of Laura's, the open vista of Lauren's rear of her tush.
In addition to that, that's a given, Max. That's not up to date. That's project. That's factual. We're not. Monty's interest in the woman's backside. I want to clarify. Max was debating that point. I clarified that point. We can move on beyond the tush. Guys,
can we? Can we though?
Why that is? What's going on here?
But at the same time, Rabbi Penny Moody didn't want to disappoint his family. with it. So he kept, so the girl that they wanted, his family wanted to set him up with, they agreed that they would pretend to go out with each other. So that would take the burden off of all the shidduch dates. And then he was free to like explore the cosmopolitan, you know, awesome secular world and taste the forbidden fruit, so to speak.
Correct. So just to guys, just to bring Jade made a good point. She actually saw the whole movie. It got into my
Netflix queue.
Things You Might Want to Watch feed, and I saw like the first thing, and then I just got progressively annoyed, and I wanted to strangle the guy. I wanted to beat him, and that was not calming me down. Right. So that it was not Netflix and chill. All right, it was not a Netflix and chill. I was getting like progressively, this guy's a problem. Okay, anyways. I wanted to redo the thing and just go, yeah. Okay, anyways. So Jay pointed out, she saw the movie and she said that one part was that, you know, the mom's pressure, obviously they use an exaggerated, super aggressive Jewish mom, hawking the crap out of him and saying, you got to be on the shit-up dates. And basically another girl who's also being pressured, and they said, look, let's make a deal. We're not interested in each other, but let's go out. So at least then we can just have a little bit of calm, because we're just getting just harassed by our super aggressive from parents. Okay. Which is, you know, obviously an exaggeration to an extent. There's, you know, based on some reality.
Did they follow
up? They did not.
We can all,
agree, for all the women in the place, we can all agree he's an idiot. He's an idiot, and we should kick him. Okay, let's try to go beyond that. There's a lot of aggression against the Jewish women in the.
He's off the Dara.
Can you go off over it again? How does the movie end?
We don't want to tell you. Watch it on Netflix.
I'm not
going
to tell about any movie. If you want to see, if you want to get the spoiler, you can go onto Wikipedia and you can read the whole plot and ruin the movie for yourself. But you can do that, you know. Okay, so people have seen it and they're upset about it. Okay, let's keep continuing. All right, let's keep on going. We got a lot of territory to cover. And we spent a lot of time working on technology that didn't work out. Okay, but we're good about that. Anyways, question number two. Why is an astronaut who recognized the small place of the Earth in Hashem's vast universe so humble? If you have the accounts of all the various astronauts, to a T, all of them feel the same way. When they were on the moon or orbiting the Earth, the sense of the vast of the cosmos had a really, which is actually the eighth chapter of Tehillim says, "Ma enosh ki siskarena." What is a man that God should even consider such a small and puny figure? An astronaut who actually has that experience, internalized that, and they have there's sort of a cosmic humility that they feel intrinsically, and it calms them down. Does the creator of worlds recognize the small place in Hashem's universe? Whoever the person may be, whatever fantasy it is, why not?
Because they're the creator, it's their world.
There you go. By definition, since you are the creator of your own world, your own subjective universe, you're by definition, in a certain sense, an arrogance. Correct. Anna's on fire tonight. There you go. Okay, we go on. So let's keep it going. We're going to go now. We're going to amp up the conversation here. I'm going to skip one question. I'm going to go. The rabbis say, this is a wild statement from the Talmud. Rabbis say, whoever has relations with a non-Jew, it is as if he has relations with a foreign god. In what way is Muchi's experience explain the saying? The Talmud says, I'll repeat the statement. Whoever has relations with a non-Jewish person, as if they had relations with the foreign god. The idolatry, the idol, as it were.
That makes it sound a lot better than it is.
Okay, well, one at a time. We're going to have somebody from MG land, and then we're going to have somebody on Zoom land. All right, so Chloe. So you're saying it'll create a causal process that by having a relationship with this non-Jewish partner, it will end up in being a connection to the idolatry itself. Okay, that's one possibility. Okay, good. I got two. Okay, so hold on. I'm going to go back. We're going to alternate. All right, Max, you wanted to weigh in on this or somebody in Zoom land?
So first, I had jokes about it, but skipping over jokes.
Jokes are good. But go, we are good with a joke. Go on.
Well, it's to say, right, that like when you're having a relationship with somebody, it's to say you're having a relationship with the sort of ideals and the principles of that person, right? So if you're entering into a relationship with someone who's like a nitwit, like you're entering into theoretically nitwit ideas and principles.
In other words, to put it succinctly, is that you cannot have a real, even men who psychologically can have a very superficial relationship has to be able to at least say that this person is good. In other words, for example, the example I give, let's say a guy, I know this could be a stretch of imagination, picks up a girl on Tinder, okay, and he's at a restaurant, and she excuses herself, and then he Googles her to see who she is, and then says Google says she was arrested for child molestation. I don't care what that guy is, that date is now over, because even if she's gorgeous, because it's something so abhorrent to his values, he cannot be with that woman, okay. And guys can go low, but there is, I mean, I'm not saying there's not a psychotic person, but by and large, okay? So conversely, follow me on this one, but therefore, if you're with somebody, male or female, you have to say they're good and their values are good. Mm. So by definition, you're really saying, what are you really saying? You're saying that their life belief, in other words, there's different kinds of idolatry. They could be Catholic, they could be a secular humanist. That's also idolatry. They're all different kinds. There's a modern idolatry and there's an ancient idolatry. It's all idolatry. It's all, a secular humanist is that man is the highest intellect in the universe. That's all there is. Simone with a point.
So based on my research on internet dating
apps. Yes.
Yeah, and then you meet them. It's like going out with a boy, and then they make fun of you.
Yeah. So what do you do with that? You do not go out with them.
I feel like
Robin,
he's like, I gotta set these girls up
because this is out of control. Okay. Okay, so. Right, correct. We're atheists, but the shul I belong to is the atheist shul. Okay, so I'm not. That's a whole conversation of why that is. It is an issue, but what am I? I mean, what am I going to say? It's a problem. I'm not supposed to tell you. That's why you have to date people who are traditional or to Orthodox Jews. That's it. I mean, what else I can tell you? What? Okay, so I haven't dated in 29 years. I'm a little behind the time, but what I've been told, J Swipe, you can have a kosher. You can do traditional on J Swipe. Orthodox non kosher. Okay, all right.
Okay. How can you be Orthodox non kosher?
I'm now going to reclaim the class. Okay, we've gone off on the there. Okay, I'm touching a sense of a sore spot. Okay, so in what way does Mutti's experience explain this saying? What was Mutti's experience based upon the video? Is that whoever has relation with the goy will have relation with the foreign god. How does the story of Mutti, which by the way, author I just looked in, is a semi-autobiographical. He wrote it from his experience. Yeah, that just made my day. Said, love it. Yeah, good. Go on. So how does the story of the Mutti story embody that point? Because what do you see in the video? Even in the trailer, you get the whole idea.
He's a whole new person.
All right, so he guys. Yes. You're among friends. You can say shit. Good.
But it's like an idea idolizing the world that we live in.
Right.
The world is the ideal world that he's trying to integrate.
Right. And ultimately, by the way, not the whole film, but by the way, he gets kicked out of the house because you saw that part with the knife, you know, that you saw that part. And then she broke up with him. Boom. Okay. Obviously. Okay. I'm not doing the whole video. Okay. We're right. Okay. So this is for the benefit of people on Zoom land. What Anna pointed out very nicely is that he was idolizing not just her, but her whole world, not just her whole world, but by extension, her whole worldview. And by doing so, he quickly, his observance, he saw quickly what was quickly shed as quick as he could get rid of it, whatever he needed to do to make, you know, whatever in order to get along, you got to go along. And he just shed himself in that will. Okay. So basically, that, by the way, if somebody succinctly says, what is the issue of interdating? What is the principle of interdating? It's because by definition, it is a level of involvement in idolatry. It's an act of idolatry. First of all, it's a repudiation. Well, where's your Jewish pride? You don't have any. And you think that the Jewish pride, the good of life is on the grass is greener on the other side, which is a false world. Okay. Which unfortunately, that's why we have so much. We have 71% intermarriage in America among non-Orthodox, 71% and climbing rapidly. By virtue of the fact that people are so poorly Jewishly educated, they don't think there is anything here within the Jewish world that they should. Of course, I should. Why should I leave? Why should I not be? I want to be what? In other words, when you hear on the dating sites the person's a Jewish atheist, basically what they're doing is, I'm just being what Americans are. Basically, college educated Americans are either agnostics or nuns or no religion or that. So they're just following the religion of the time, which is that. If it was 100 years ago and they were in Germany, we learned in the past, it would have been Lutheranism. It's not really a philosophical position, generally. It's just basically, I want to be with the dominant worldview, and that's it. And they never got an education to believe otherwise. Okay, now we're going to get to the most wild example, seemingly of an exalted person with non-Jewish women, which of course is King Solomon, Shlomo Melech. Okay, so I want to have somebody read it out. All right, Stephanie, guys, follow along. Stand there. I'm going to invite Stephanie to the stand. I'm going to stand away.
Well, thank you all. Hi. Okay, Solomon, should I do the announcement? Just kidding.
Yeah.
Solomon allied himself by marriage with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He married Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David to live there, until he had finished building his palace and the house of the Lord and the walls around Jerusalem. King Solomon loved many foreign women in addition to Pharaoh's daughter, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Phoenician, and Hittite women from the nations of which the Lord had said to the Israelites, none of you shall join them and none of them shall join you, lest they turn your heart away to follow their gods. Such Solomon clung to and loved. He had 700 royal wives and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. In his old age, his wives turned away from Solomon's heart after other gods, and he was not as wholeheartedly devoted to the Lord his God as his father David had been. Solomon followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Phoenicians, and Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Solomon did what was displeasing to the Lord and did not remain loyal to the Lord like his father David. At that time, Solomon built a shrine for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill near Jerusalem, and one for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites. And he did the same for all of his foreign wives who offered in sacrifice to their gods. The Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him about this matter, not to follow other gods. He did not obey what the Lord had commanded. And the Lord said to Solomon, because you are guilty of this, you have not kept my covenant and the laws which I enjoined upon you, I will tear the kingdom away from you and give it to one of your servants, but for the sake of your father, David, I will not do it in your lifetime. I will tear it away from your son. However, I will not tear away the whole kingdom. I will give your son one tribe for the sake of my servant, David, and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen.
Beautiful job. Beautiful rendering. All right. You guys heard that. Okay. So this is a wild story. Wild story. So there's a couple parts here, but let's start with the first part. What was the, all right. So I see everybody's turned off their video. All right. Except for Scott. Scott Shapiro's got the video on. All right. So who's else? Cause you know what happens when a student turns off
Max
the video?
Max is still here.
If he's Jewish like me, he's going to be eating dinner and stuffing his face and not showing you the drips of ketchup coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, all right. Good to see you guys. I just want to see that I'm talking to somebody. All right. I got the people live here. All right. Okay. Question number 9. Shlomo, Solomon allied himself by marriage with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. What does the verse say was King Shlomo's motivation to marry the daughter of Pharaoh? Okay, so unpack that more. Until literally the 19th century, this was a classic move in foreign policy. Exactly. In other words, how do you ensure that your neighbors remain friendly neighbors? You marry their daughters. Did he necessarily love Paro's daughter? No, the pasuk says very clearly, Shlomo allied himself by marriage with Paro, king of Egypt. He married Paro's daughter and brought her into the city of David. In other words, the marriage part seemed to be secondary. The primary thing was forging an alliance. But then, as Stephanie read, did he just do it with one woman? No, he did it with basically all the neighboring society communities. Now, you want to have a lot of peace. So what obviously is his motivation from the power perspective? We'll get to the women perspective. From the power perspective. He's building an empire. He becoming essentially the emperor of the Middle East by literally marrying into and creating these relationships, strategic relationships with all the neighboring countries. Shlomo wanted to be not just the king of Israel. Apparently that was not good enough. He wanted to do what? To be the emperor of the Middle East. And how do you accomplish that? You marry all the women. According to Chazal, they had a conversion. Obviously, as you see from the verses, not so sincere because they had what they call recidivism. They went back to their prior traits. Okay. Recidivism. That's your SAT word for the day. Okay. We continue. What? Well, by the way, you guys can fantasize about that a little later. But Shlomo clung to them and loved them. In other words, bottom line is that he there's what else is going on here? Is it purely foreign policy? No. And the proof is, first it says he clung to them and loved them, and concubines 300. There's no foreign policy there. There is no foreign policy. Concubine is correct. Concubine means, okay, I'll explain. Concubine means a marriage without, it's a second class marriage, which means that in case of divorce, you don't get the ksuba settlement. It's one distinction. They're not a slave. That's a different cabin term. We're not going to go again. No, not a mistress either. Cause they're actually, no, because really, there's a kind of marriage, and if somebody would sleep with that woman, that would be an adultery. Okay, I know this is a lot of this part of this is very interesting here. Everybody's all right. We continue on now. Here we go. How is Mati like King Solomon? Shayna? How is Mati like King Solomon? I'm calling on people in Zoom land now.
I had to figure out how to unmute when you're host and screen sharing. The toolbar is in a different spot.
No problem.
How
is Mati like King Solomon?
So I'm getting from King Solomon that he once it's not to say that he wants to experience the freedom. It's that, or maybe he does want to experience freedom to a certain extent, but as we were just saying, it's to have peace and to basically unite the entire Middle East. Whereas Mati was just trying to get out of the confines of his religious upbringing.
Well, let me ask you a question. Why wasn't Shlomo Melch just satisfied with being like other kings of Israel, which is basically being a king and getting married, and that's it? What was, you don't see in other kings of Bnei Israel, David HaMelech, his father, married only Jewish women, and that was it.
Yeah, but you see it afterwards.
In other words, the king is limited. The king is limited by who he should know. Limit to 18 wives. But again, their wife-husband relationship is not our contemporary wife-wife relationship. So, so obviously, he wasn't satisfied with just being the king of Israel. He wants to be the Melech Mashiach of the whole world. He wrote Mishlei Kohelet and Shir Shirim, which, of course, gets me to my next question.
That he was trying to make a world separate from what he was commanded by God.
There you go. All right, Max, on the ball there, Max. Well done. Here's the question. Max said, so he's trying to create a world, which was beyond what God wanted him to do. And he thought because he was commanded that he, not to marry too many wives, why the Torah says, they'll affect you. Don't marry non-Jewish women because they will turn into idolatry. And he was the smartest of all men. What did he believe was going to happen? He's going to outsmart that. But what happened when he got old? They turned him. So how is it? We have a big paradox, which I want to ask you guys a question. How is it possible that the king of Israel, the builder of the first temple, the author of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Songs of Songs, which are still in our Bible, last I checked, is from the open verses of the thing involved in idolatry? How do you square that circle? If he's such a terrible guy, they should have kicked him out.
We I mean, part of it is blessing from David, right? Like that Sir Solomon's Solomon comes to power not through any kind of divine ordination like Saul and David, but rather through kind of, you know, court intrigue with his mother Bathsheba and Shmuel. They kind of decide that he should be king. And so in a lot of ways Shlomo's like running on the merit of his father, that King David is what's right. Kind of pushing him along.
On one hand, yes, he is an extension of the Davidic dynasty, but first of all, even the verse that you read clearly, which we'll get to the Gemara, he says he was not as wholeheartedly devoted to the Lord his God. What do you mean he's not? You're doing idolatry. That's the worst thing in the Torah. What are we talking about? So, by the way, we are low on time because we spent a lot of time on our technical part of the evening. Let's go to the. I don't have time to really do it justice. Everybody, take a look at the statement from the Talmud in Shabbat 56b. Let's have somebody read it from Zoom land. Everybody, look. Those people who are here, look at the bottom of page 2. Let me have somebody read. Who'd like to read? Any volunteers? I'm going to pick on somebody. No, I want to do the Zoom people. I want to include them. Dan Lastman, you there? Picking on you. Who can read? Who could quit from Zoom people?
I can do it. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachamani said that Rabbi Yonatan said, anyone who says that King Solomon sinned is nothing other than mistaken, as it is stated, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. By inference, Solomon's heart was not equal to the heart of David, his father's. However, he also did not sin. The Gemara raises another question. Isn't it written, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, clearly indicating that Solomon sinned? Rather, he should have protested against the conduct of his wives, i.e. their involvement in idolatry, but he did not protest. The verse ascribes to him liability as if he sinned.
Okay, so first of all, what does the text say? Does it say that he did idolatry?
No.
Does it say? I mean, right. So it seems that it said he built a shrine. He followed. Right. it seems like he sinned. So the whole, there's a whole Tom back and forth, but the problem says he was not perfect. So what do you mean he's not perfect? There's, no, there's the who's the rabbi here? It is Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. He's saying anybody who says that he sinned overtly with idolatry is mistaken. So that's a, which seems to be a very stretch of the imagination here.
But building, rather, building altars to foreign gods isn't idolatry.
Right, that's terrible. Right.
I mean, so, he built shrines. I mean, I don't know, Penny, if you went and built like a great big church, I don't know that I would say that you were still on the...
Correct. So what's going on here? So what's going on? All right.
Rabbi, question that was bothering me before, I didn't want to ask it, but now I want to ask it again. Isn't him serving his intelligence and his ego enough of an idolatry to say, I'm not going to listen to the rabbis or God and I'm going to do what I want to do because I'm the smartest guy in the world?
Terrell, that's really the next best question, number 12. All right, so here's the basic deal. So what Shmuel Bar Nachmeni is identifying is by virtue that you have two opposing texts, that he was not perfect or wholehearted with God, which implies that he's not absolutely terrible. And the other part he's terrible is that the Torah, the Navi, is using the following literary device. What's the literary device? Saying that basically his old age, he got impacted by the women, which of course you have to answer, what's the deal of the old age? His strength has waned. He could not fight them anymore. And basically, instead of him controlling them, they controlled him. And what the control? He looked the other way. He didn't have the kayak. He didn't have the energy to stop them. But for a person of that stature, for him to basically give a green light to essentially look away when such evil is done and will take down the entire empire, the entire kingdom of Israel, what the text saying, it's as if he literally worshipped and bowed down. It's just as bad. In other words, the fact that he didn't technically do the activity, but allowed all of his numerous idolatrous women basically to run the show, it's equal to the fact that he's doing that, even though he didn't technically do an idol. Because you have the problem is that if that's the case, they shouldn't say he was not as wholehearted in following Hashem as David. I mean, this is a complete disaster. She's, yes, Daffy. Yes. Correct. Yes, it will. Correct. 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 Daphne's point, just for the people on Zoom, I'll just reiterate to tell me if I got it right, that King Solomon's story is not just a story of Mati, but everybody to varying degrees, which we always think we're always a little smarter. We always imagine we're a little smarter than ourselves, than we think we actually are. Of when controlling ourselves and doing the right thing. When it comes to rationalization, if King Solomon made the rationalization, we're making the rationalization. And he can rationalize a way that he's somehow not in violation of Torah, and he'll have 1,000 women on his campus, somehow or another. And that his conversion is going to work. And meanwhile, they're doing the idolatry. And apparently he was effective as a younger man. And then as his koach, the psychological energy diminished, his capacity to fight them or to re-educate them. In other words, he thought they'll heal the conversion and they'll be part of the Jewish people. It'll all work out. And the reality is he had this fantasy, this world he wanted to create. And in reality is he ended up becoming taken down. And therefore become that, as you know, the two kingdoms of Judah and Israel was split, and the Jewish people suffered dramatically. Ultimately, the loss of the 10 tribes, etc. This sin that he did, which the Talmud saying was not the literal act of idolatrous service, but the verse in the Navi is saying it's essentially equal as doing it. If you're greenlining that for a person of your stature, you're doing, that's essentially doing idolatry. There's no difference. Yeah.
one of those times where it'd be very interesting if there were female commentators, because I think that
you're a female commentator. Good. No, it's not the women. No, the women are not the. No. He wasn't becoming senile. In other words, it's not their fault. In other words, they grew up Phoenician, okay? And my dad, the king of Phoenicia, whatever that is, or Egypt, whatever, felt it was in their best economic political thing that I got to marry this Jewish man. All right, and the Jewish man said, I got to get conversion, okay? We're all familiar with that, the conversion for the marriage, okay? We now have a little more of an extensive situation, but there was maybe obviously not so effective. The learning program wasn't, shall we say, as successful. So it's now, again, it's not these women's fault. They're brought up like every other woman in the ancient world, and they're brought into, and it's really not their fault, and they're brought into. No, the Torah says clearly. That's literally one of the verses that you read. That was the second verse. That's exactly right. That was right. Cain loved many foreign women in addition to all these women. From the nation which God had said to Israel, none shall join them, and none shall join you, lest they turn your heart away from their gods. So there's an immediate indictment. Even though he may have technically worked out the conversion issue, in other words, it may have been, again, the Navi's not concerned about the technical halach details, because bottom line is they may have been halachically Jewish, but in their hearts they're idolatrous. He made all these rationalizations. He quite as like he created all these a world for himself, and that's the bottom line. So so that's the deal. Going on to Chaim's point. So Chaim, where are you? I'm trying to find you on the Zoom over here. So yes, ultimately he, as the author of the creator of worlds, he created his own world. That he's the Melech HaMashiach. He's in control. He can control his instincts. He's not affected by his sexual interests, of course. Chas v'shalom, 1,000 women. He can control these women. They're not going to control him. And it's a fantasy. And he got taken down. But I'm promised, since he's, when a person gets taken down, that's their own damage. If you're the king of Israel, you're taking the Jewish people down. That's the tragedy here. He had a national role. And he failed. Okay, and obviously as a role model, you know, that's going to have massive impact. So, question 13 is what Daphne said. All of us, to varying degrees, we are all creators of worlds we want to live in, and in order to make that happen, we have certain rationalizations, and we imagine we're much stronger than we are. We're not. We can control the situation. We can't. And we don't. You know. So this halacha we don't need, we can work around it. Shlomo Melech was told he can't have these women. It will impact you psychologically. It won't affect me. It did. And so we can make a kal v'chomer. If the smartest man in the Tanakh, one of the smartest men in the Tanakh, King Solomon, rationalized the way when the few times the Torah says, don't marry too many wives, lest it turn your heart, and it's not gonna affect me, and it did, how much more so us who are not the smartest people, you know, alive, walking the earth, you know, because when it comes to self-deception, every man's a genius. And King Solomon, the ultimate genius, fooled himself, tragically. Now, bring this back to our curriculum. This was, because remember, our journey of our curriculum is, if you look at the little infographic, we start with exile, strangers in a strange land. Yaakov Avinu comes down to the land of Israel, joins Joseph, and his sons, 70 people together. They move into Goshen. They're going to be in a Jewish neighborhood. Things are going to go well. But then the pasuk says, and they become numerous. Vayesha of Yisrael, Beeretz Mitzrayim, Beeretz Goshen, the Jew and Israel settled the land of Egypt, the land of Goshen. Vayechzuba, and they acquired holdings in it. So becoming, you know, when Jews come to a new land, they become successful, making money. Real estate. Oh, by year, they were fertile and increased greatly. Jews becoming mockers. What happened? So Chazal point out, The lamb grabbed them and held on to them as if they wanted to leave before the set time. They would not be able to do so, like a man who's being held out of his control. That's the story of Mitzrayim, Jews of Mitzrayim, story of America. Jews come to America and want to, you know, start a Jewish community and try to autonomous Jewish community within America. And then who wins? America wins.
America.
And Shlomo Melech before the time wants to be the Melech HaMashiach. He wants to, he's not going to be affected by the nation of the world. In other words, he will control them. They will not control him. What happens? They have the last laugh. Wasn't initially. He gets old. He gets weaker. His resolve crumbles and they affect him and they take him down. Yes. What, in other words, to say that it has a numerous applications. If we, first of all, A, we should know that we are, that the nature of mankind is to be what they call a creator of worlds, as Rashi says. I want to create my own world and I'm the star in that world. It's a fantasy world. So it's good to have people to help you navigate that. Are you being realistic? Could be in the world of dating. Could it be in the world of job? Could be in the world of all kinds of different things. Am I being realistic or am I in a fantasy world? Very helpful. Point number one. Point number two, mitzvos, halachos, I don't need them. I'm transcendent. Every mitzvah is, I'm going to get to you, Daphne. Every mitzvah is essentially a therapy to deal with various parts of our personality to improve it. I don't need this. It's not going to affect me. Shlomo Melech affected him. It will affect you plenty. You may not be consciously aware of it because the neighbor, that's why the Yetzer Hara is the metaphor is the Nachash, the serpent. Because what does a serpent do? As this foreigner says, it slides through the grass. You don't detect it. And then it gets you. And then you're done. And that's the nature of the HRA. Always can give you a rationalization quicker than you can imagine. And before you know it, you're in a bad situation. So it's a tremendously, the reason that the Torah and the Navi tells us the sad tale of Shlomo Melech's fall, the builder of the Beit HaMikdash, his, you know, fall down from grace, is not to besmirch him and tell Lashon Hara, so we'll learn. We can be improved. We can be uplifted. We'll not be, we'll take these lessons to heart and recognize, hey, it's difficult navigating there, but the bottom line is, and specifically, and therefore, all of us as sort of, living in the modern world and living in the Jewish world and how to navigate that, we have to know you're on a very slender bridge and you can fall over and you can, it could be very, and it'll be very subtle, very, very subtle. And that thing's about who are our friends, who do we spend time with? What are, you know, these things are unconscious. They're subtle. They're incremental. It didn't happen in one day. It was over many years, many decades with Shlomo. And that's something to consider. Okay, guys, so somebody says to you, but let's pause if you have a, the reason why this, you have a, this is a story about intermarriage, because what's the best fighting against intermarriage? Jewish pride, which is spurred on by Jewish education. That's really the only antidote. If you don't have Jewish pride, because you're not educated, Jewish education, which produces Jewish pride, which is like, I can't possibly want to start a life with somebody else who doesn't share my worldview and values. But he hated it. It wasn't education that saw, he did not see the joy of Judaism. He did not see the beauty of Judaism. It was just a narrow, confining, imprisoning experience, and he wanted out. The story of another Netflix special or Amazon, Unorthodox. Right, this woman was stuck in that world, and she had to get out because she felt that she was being suffocated. That's the deal. All right, guys, have a good night. I'm sorry about all the challenges, but we got to share out anyways. Yeah, thank you for everybody.
Thank you, Penny.
No worries, Lila. Told that Rabbi, Rabbi Penny. Be well.
Thanks, Rabbi.
We'll be teaching the senior fellowship 8 o'clock. Dr. Dina Berkowitz, part of the monthly. Highlighting featured MGE educators, and we have the very best, Dr. Adina Berkowitz. All right, guys, have a great night.
Is Rabbi Wild having the Tanya tonight?
Tanya class.
Yes. We're gonna wait till he gets onto that screen. I'm gonna get him onto the Shayna,